Here is one of a series of talks by spiritual leader Lola McDowell Lee, spanning two decades from the early 70s through the 90s. Lola was a Zen Roshi whose Rinzai lineage included Dr. Henry Plutov and renowned Zen master Shigetsu Sasaki. Lola was a religious scholar as well as an ordained Christian minister. While the talks are focused mainly on Zen and Buddhism, Lola drew on many spiritual traditions, including those of Jesus, Plato, Lao Tzu, the Hindu Vedas, Meister Eckhart, and Gurdjieff.
Okay. This is really a lesson I got together for summer session. So if it slips once in a while about your sitting, why, you'll know why. The Master Gutai. He raised his finger whenever he was asked a question. And a young monk, a young monk, began to imitate him. And so when anybody asked this young monk about his master's teaching, he would raise his finger. And so Gutai heard about this mischief. And one day he seized this young monk and he cut off his finger. And the young monk began to cry, and he started to run away. And just about when the time he got to the door, Gutai called him. And the monk turned his head, and Gutai raised his finger. And at that instant, that young monk saw. He was enlightened. Now, when Gutai, many years later, was about to die, all the monks gathered around him, which is what they do. And he said to these monks, I attained my finger Zen from my teacher Tenru. And throughout my life, it was never exhausted. And after saying this, Gutai passed away. So what is this one finger Zen? Now, for the past few weeks, our days and the nights, I think, have been very beautiful. We have nice buildings, adequate buildings, and we have this surround of the trees and always how we appreciate when the cannas are planted here. Yeah. And during the session, we had some good companionship and some good advantages happened to some people. And then also, I understand, we had good food, more or less. Tokidoki, now and then, sometimes. So, now, once in a while, we should think about the Tenzo's efforts. And the Tenzo is the position of whomever is in charge of the kitchen activities. And as a general rule, it is a monk who has had much training, who is what we would say well-seasoned. Tenzo. Now, as I understand it, there are six major positions or stations. And one of the most important of these positions is, of course, this Tenzo, which would be roughly translated as the head cook. But that would be a very poor translation. Because if you say cook or chef or something like that, the spiritual implications are lost. Tenzo, ten means heaven. Ten. You know, so there was a spiritual thing to it all. If you say cook, it doesn't say anything about the discipline which that particular monk, now as Tenzo, has come through in order to be Tenzo. And there are many stories of monks very busy on their problem, you know, and had an encounter with the Tenzo, and it has really helped many to realize his situation, this situation. And we know that, according to the legend, the sixth patriarch, Wei Ning, was what they call a rice pounder. And he was there pounding rice in the kitchen for 3 years before the Roshi made any direct contact with him. And I remember Vit Van said frequently, those of you who attended his classes, that if you're looking for an enlightened one, you look in the kitchen. And it's through the traditions, the kitchen. And some of these people sneer at women, and who's in the kitchen? Get back at them somehow. Why not? And in the Soto Zen, you know, Rinzai Zen and Soto Zen, there are the stories of Dogen Zenji. And one of which is about his visit to China. He went to China to find out really what this Chan thing was all about. I mean, he had been interested in it, and he taught it and so on and so on, but he wanted to know from the horse's mouth, as it were. You know, so he went to China. And at one of the temples, he visited quite a number of temples there, and he practiced there and he studied. And in one of these temples, it was an extremely hot June afternoon. Oh, you know. And he saw that this elderly Tenzo working very hard just outside the kitchen. And he was spreading seaweed out to dry on his straw mat. So Dogen Zenji went over to watch what he was doing. And the man was what we call elderly. So Dogen Zenji asked him, "Sir, how old are you?" And this man, this old Tenzo, answered, "I am 68. "Well," he says, why don't you get an assistant, you know, for such strenuous work?" And the Tenzo looked at him and he said, "He is not me." "Well," says Dogen Zenji, "maybe you are too serious. At your age, you have to take care of yourself, and the sun this afternoon is very strong, so please rest." "Rest?" says this Tenzo. "For how long?" See, in Zen, there are these statements. You know, if not me, who? And this old Tenzo is saying, if not now, when? You remember those, huh? If not me, who? If not now, when? So, you know, the little story points to a great perseverance. Perseverance feathers. Right? Not postponing until tomorrow, and not procrastinating, and not shoving it off on somebody else's shoulders. You know, it's, if not me, who? And, you know, I've been through it myself, so I know we get home and we're supposed to, it comes a time, we're supposed to sit and we say to ourselves, you know, I really am tired tonight. I don't feel as good as I should feel or as good as I could feel. Who's going to know whether or not I sit? I sit at the Zendo and I think that's sufficient. These are the conversations or arguments we have with ourselves. You know, it's like one excuse right after the other. Crackers out of a box, like the ad on TV. One after another. And the box is it has no bottom to it with the excuses we can come up with. Right? Right. If not now, when? Then there is a story of another Tenzo who came to the ship that Dogen Zenji was on. He was just coming in. And he came to the ship to buy some dried mushrooms. So he had a nice conversation with this young Dogen. And after a while, though, he says, I have to get back to the monastery to cook for the monks. And Dogen says, but if you don't, maybe somebody will do it for you. So why don't you stay here with me tonight and we can really, you know, have a nice talk. No, I have to get back. My duty, my pleasure. So we notice that both of these Tenzos are saying rather sarcastically to Dogen, you know, you outsider, you don't know what practice is. Now, in repeating these little stories, I do realize that they mean different things to different people. If you have good practice, degree of practice that you have experienced, pretty good discipline, then you smile because you kind of understand what these Tenzos are saying. And if you haven't taken the practice to heart, well, maybe then you just carry a heavy load, but you certainly don't smile. Now, the Tenzo prepares the food for the monks. The Tenzo works in the kitchen as if he were working in the Zendo. No difference to him, whether he's sitting in the Zendo. See, this is why it's necessary that they have quite a degree of discipline before they become Tenzo. He works as if he were in the Zendo. He works neatly. He works cleanly. He works silently. And he punctually prepares the food as he maintains a Zazen atmosphere in the kitchen. He wastes nothing. Not water, not electricity, not wood, not the use of the utensils, not time, and certainly not his energy. His energy is not wasted on idle chatter, which very often turns out to be squibbles and squabbles. You don't squibble and squabble if you're in silence, right? Now, if the Tenzo is good, good at his position, you know, then the whole session goes very well. If he's sloppy, then it becomes very difficult for the monks to continue. He works behind closed doors so that he himself is extremely inconspicuous, as should be. We all should be, huh? However, his work, the results of his inconspicuousness is very conspicuous. You know, see, it is tremendously influential. So you can give it a little thought and you can see what practice entails. I mean, here's another box that you have barely scratched the surface. (Clears throat) Now, why we sit for sesshin, during sesshin, and we don't have to do very much, you know, except sit on the mat, keep your spine straight, and breathe. Big deal. That's what you do, you know? Or you sit on a chair, and you keep your spine straight, and you breathe. What's so difficult? And now and then you get up and walk, or you get up and run, and then you sit some more. And then after a while, you walk to the other building to get something to eat. And so the day goes by, right? Et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. Everything else is done for you. If you're sitting, daydreaming, cooking up some fancy situations in your minds, even then, 12 o'clock rolls around, and you will be given some food. You don't have to go prepare your own. But supposing in the midst of preparing your food, this Tenzo begins to dream up some wild fancies of his own. You know what? Everybody complains. The cream of wheat is cooked too long. Huh? You know, Zazen is extremely important. Sitting is extremely important. Confrontation is extremely important. But that's not the all of it. You know, every time we have Zazen in this place, we end with that little sutra, you know, Shujin Muhen Zai Seigan Do, which translated is, however innumerable beings are, I vow to save them. However inexhaustible the passions are, I vow to extinguish them. However immeasurable the dharmas are, I vow to master them. However incomparable the Buddha truth is, I vow to attain it. Now, it begins with this Shujin Muhen Zayan Do. However innumerable beings are, I vow to save them. Which simply means we work for another. And I don't, I mean, they use the word in religion usually to be of service to another. Because if you are being serving another, you are serving higher power. To be of service. The bhakti yoga of the Vedanta, to be of service. Now, and there's a story to illustrate this about a young man who came to stay at a monastery for a while, and he was a lay student, you know, like we are. He was not a monk. He was a lay student, but he, you know, he'd done a lot of sitting. Now, most of the monks were away. It was the interim period, you know, they do 3 months of sitting, and then they have a vacation time, interim period, where they don't do much of anything, and the monks all go home, or they go back to their temples, or they go out and meet their girlfriends, or whatever, you know, so this interim period. So there were not very many monks there. And Tanaka-san, this lay student, was asked if he would like to be Tenzo while he was staying there. He had asked to participate in the monastery life, and so that he could really become immersed in it for a couple of months. So asking him, and his answer was, oh, yes. So he took up the cooking there. And one day, the Roshi came to the kitchen and said, hello, Tanaka-san. Ikagi desu ka? How are you? Oh, genki desu. I'm fine. Thank you. Do you enjoy being Tenzo? Asked the Roshi. Oh, yes, I do. But, said the Roshi, why are you doing this? I am doing this for all the monks and all the sentient beings. At which the Roshi left the kitchen. See, and a few days later, this Roshi comes again. Hello, Tanaka-san, how are you? Oh, I'm fine, thank you, Roshi. Do you enjoy being Tenzo? Oh, yes, I do. Why are you doing this? Well, I cook for all the monks and all the sentient beings. You know, so the Roshi, and very silently, leaves the kitchen. And a few days later, the Roshi again comes to the kitchen. Hello, Tanaka-san, huh? How are you? How is your cooking coming along? Oh, it's getting better and better. Why are you doing all this? For all the monks, shut up! Comes the Roshi, huh? Do not deceive yourself. You are doing this for you. For your practice. For your virtue and for your understanding. Remember that. Whatever you do it for yourself. Whatever you do for yourself. See, and you know very well how I have hammered at this phrase, you know. Do not deceive yourself. And you know, as I say, this it is as if this phrase has no bottom. And we, once in a while, we think, and so-and-so was going to take advantage of me, but I outsmarted him. How about the times when you've managed to outsmart yourself? How about the times when you lie to yourself? How you deceive yourself? Over and over, and over and over, and over and over, and again and again and again and again and again. Continuing. Ad nauseum, finally, huh? Yeah, yeah. This box has no bottom. Do not, the deeper you get into yourself, the more you can see how you have deceived yourself. And you must cut it off. Otherwise, what good is all this zazen doing? Now, we know, or I'm sure we have thought about it somewhere along the line, that all people are basically alike. We have one face, we have two eyes, we have one nose that has two nostrils, we have one mouth and one tongue. Sometimes it's crooked and sometimes it's straight. Remembering Jack Lee. Yeah, that's right. See, sometimes he speaks with forked tongue. Yeah, we have two ears, we have two hands, we have two feet, and through here we are one. Now the trunk is one. So this way we are all similar, we're all alike. And yet we are so very different. We are amazingly different. We misunderstand each other much more than we realize. You realize what you're talking about when you're talking. And so somebody else talks to you and uses the same words as you would use, and you think you understand. Words have different meanings to different people in the same language. Then, once in a great while, once in a while, we hear something. Not necessarily a word, just a hearing something. And suddenly we understand this situation, this matter, this moment. You know, it can be the sound of the rain all of a sudden starting. It can be the sound of a door slamming. It could be some sound that we hear every day. Or it may be a sound that we hear now and then. Or maybe a sound we've never really heard before. But all of a sudden, the sound opens a door. And in through that open door, we see what we have never seen before. We see this matter, this situation, this moment, this. Now, in the Diamond Sutra, there is a sentence, a phrase, all composite things are like a dream. And I think that's where Soto Zen gets, like a dream, like a fantasy. Is it Soto Zen? Shibishibiyama? Or whatever. All composite things are like a dream. A bubble and a shadow. Like a dewdrop and a flash of lightning. And they are thus to be regarded. All composite things, all things that are made up of things, elements. Dewdrop is composed of two chemicals. Flash of lightning, we don't know what it's composed of. I don't. Come and go. Come and go. Not enduring, come and go. And there have been monks who, we hear, read stories about them, who truly saw this matter, this situation. And he became a Roshi eventually, because it was the beginning of his enlightenment. And he truly saw this situation. Usually, by and large, we say understand, he understands. He heard the sound and understood this situation. But, you know, this matter, this situation, this moment, passeth all understanding. Now I understand. After I have gone beyond, that is, I have transcended understanding, then I can come back and say, oh yeah, I understand. Now I understand. Now, so similar we are. And yet, because we are composites, about which we never think, how many times a day do you stop and think to yourself and ask, oh, I am composed of many elements. Many times a day you do this, huh? Really? Not to mention naming some of these elements of which I am composed. Yeah? Our composition, you know, elements brought together in a particular fashion for a moment. For a blink of an eye. And we take it so serious. Yeah? Elements come together for a moment. We are thus to be regarded. So much for... See how you deceive yourself? You never think of it. Just me. Here we are, group of people. Similar. And during that week of Sesshin, we ate the same food, sit in the same building, we had the same kinds of pain, you know, be it a pain in the knee or a pain in the neck or a pain in the back or a pain in the head, you know, pain is pain. Our bodies are of the same elements, water and mineral and air and a little bit of this and a little bit of that. little bit of something else, you know. And yet we're not really the same because they've come together a little differently. Little different, little shade of difference in how they came together. That's all. See? We all have emotions, but the quality of emotions are not the same. But emotion is emotion. Love is love and hate is hate and anger is anger and jealousy is jealousy. Some people have more and some people have less and there's degrees of it. So there's a little difference. And then, of course, a thought is a thought. How many of you are thinking during this whole period of Zazen, how many of you are thinking the same thought? Nobody. Some are thinking about the past, and some are thinking about the future, and some are thinking about the pain, and some are thinking, well, we won't say that. Some are hoping for help of some kind or another. Some are grieving. Some are wondering about the sex life of their best friend. You'd be surprised. Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised.
No, you wouldn't be surprised at that at all. Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Wow, you know, he's sitting next to Shinzan Sama. And he's probably sitting and worrying about his sex life when he goes home. I mean, anything. You know, anything, just so you don't have to look at your pain. You know. Thoughts are many and they are varied. And who says what it is that, how come something pops into your mind? Probably because of the composition. So different we are, because there are some of you who would just, if a thought like that crossed your mind, you would be horrified. You know. So different we are and so much alike. Yeah. Now, during this little span of time that we call our lifetime, we are given opportunities to do our best, which we sometimes do. And sometimes we do our medium, and sometimes we do our lousy. Wow! We can invent a new language as we go along. Once in a while, we actually have a rare endeavor. I mean, it's rare. Huh? And we forget. We are our long time, lifetime project. People run around looking for projects to get involved with, huh? You got it. You are your own project all of the time. For a whole lifetime. Yeah. Well, we may either have a lot of time left or very little time left. What are you going to do with it? Yeah. For you. For you. Now we come to this Gutai's finger. There are three important points in this little story that Gutai always raised his finger, and that the boy was enlightened, and when the master Gutai passed away, he said, I attained this finger Zen from my teacher. I have used it throughout my whole life, but I could never use it up. Now, Gutai, when he was a younger man, he lived in a little hut on a mountain. And he was doing Zazen and chanting all by himself. And one day, while he was doing his Zazen, a nun, all dressed for travel, she was wearing the bamboo hat, this is in China, bamboo hat, and she was carrying a staff. And she entered his little hut, his cottage. You know, she came in and she walked around that room three times and then she stopped right in front of him, you know, where he was sitting. And she said to him, speak! Which, by which she meant, say something. I mean, you're doing zazen, and you know, and all this stuff, and you got the incense going. Say something to adequately express this so-called ultimate reality. And he looked at her, and she said, speak! You know, say something to express your Zen. Now to him, her manner was very rough and rude. She was actually contemptuous of him. This is... She hadn't even taken off her hat when she came in the door. You know, and he's, you know, of course he's thinking about all these things, what else, you know, huh? And he, because he was intimidated, and he couldn't answer her. So he was ashamed of himself. And the only thing he could think of to say was, finally he looked at her very sheepishly and said, it's getting very late. Won't you please stay overnight? And she said to him, if you speak, I will stay. If not, I will leave. But he couldn't express his comprehension in his own way. She left. You know. And he was so ashamed of himself that here he'd been working and he, you know. So he decided he would leave the hut and he would join a monastery to practice zazen. And he got himself all ready to go, and it was an evening, so he went to sleep. And during the night, he had a dream. And a protecting ancestor, protecting deity, you know, appeared in his dream and said to him, wait, just wait, don't leave yet. In a few days, a living bodhisattva will come here. So he had prepared his hat and his sandals and his bag, but he set them aside and he decided he would wait. And sure enough, a few days later, this Zen master named Tenryu. What do you do with a U? You don't pronounce him. Tenryu. He came. So. And receiving him, why, this little gutai, and told him the story about the nun who had not even removed her hat. You know, this is what stuck in his mind. You know, this, you know, what sticks in your mind? It gets glued in there. And this is what you repeat about this situation all the time. So it was, in this case, it was, he was ashamed of himself and all this and that and the other, which he admitted, but she didn't even take off her hat. Yeah. So he begged this master, you know, please teach me. So this teacher was silent for a long time, and Gutai just sat there and looking at him very single-mindedly. See, he had that much under his belt anyway. And then suddenly this teacher raised his finger. Time was right. Time was ready for this Gutai. And with this raised finger, he understood this condensed, undescribable, inexpressible, this matter, this situation, this moment. And so throughout his whole life thereafter, whenever somebody asked him about Zen, up came the finger. And when he was old, older, comes this young attendant monk, imitating him. Of course, nobody says anything about Gutai imitated his, you know, imitating. And as the story goes, and it's just a story, We don't necessarily know that this happened. You know, the story goes he cut off the monk's finger. And the boy cried and he started to run away, and Kutai called after him, "Stop! You know, turn around!" And the young monk turned his head, and Kutai raised his own finger, and of course the boy was going to imitate him. And in that very instant, he knew. He realized this matter. Yeah. Now, the cutting off of the finger and all the blood and violence that it brings to mind is not the point of the story. You ignore that. Yeah. Do not misunderstand. What appears in this story is the readiness of time. Always working to get yourself ready. Get yourself ready. Get yourself ready. This is for the perseverance. You are the project that you are getting ready. See? When you do Zazen, you do it with intense single-mindedness. Little by little, then, the dualistic, discriminating state of consciousness disappears. Gradually, we allow this subject and the object to approach each other so that they can become one. And they must. Zazen is not a matter of entering into some kind of ecstasy, or as it is called today, some kind of a high. That's not it. No. People do misunderstand. Hakuin Zenji, in his Song of Meditation, one of the phrases in it, even those who have practiced it, which is Zazen, even those who have practiced it for just one sitting will see all their evil karma erased. Of course, the thing is, if you're going to erase all the evil karma, you will also erase all the good karma. See, the little phrases like this are very much misunderstood, right? And of course, I have met people who have taken this sentence literally. I mean, as many people take the Bible literally, which they should not do. They figure that they did sit once, and therefore they were enlightened. Yeah. Or even those who say, well, I sat for 30 minutes today and some of my karma has been erased. You know? Some of my passions are gone. And greed is no more. Really. I'll tell you, this is not one Zazen, if you think that. This is not one. Even those who have practiced just one sitting of total oneness. One sitting is what he's talking about. Huh? Yeah. One non-dualistic sitting, even that is not sufficient. But just one sitting. One. There is just one sitting. Yeah. At the bottom of the ocean, there is one stone. Pick it up without getting your robes wet. One stone. There is one rock at the bottom of the well. Pick it up without getting your sleeves wet. One. What is the sound of one hand? One hand. One stone. One finger. One. Comprendez-vous? Yeah. A flower arrangement can be the gong, the clappers, the taste of food, cleaning, cooking, all. One finger. Is it? Should be. Each activity has a depth according to your practice, according to your desire, according to your discipline. The sound of the concho bell speaks quite honestly of the depth of your practice. It is your finger zen in sound. How you do things, how you act, your one finger zen. You. The enlightenment which Gutai arrived at and which the young monk arrived at has nothing to do with the finger. The finger points to the moon. Do you look at the finger or do you look at the moon? If you cling to the idea of a finger, then Gutai and Bodhidharma will be so disappointed. The finger is a symbol, like Hyakujo's fox or Joshu's dog. Does the dog have a Buddha nature?
Moo.
Symbols. Has a finger a Buddha nature or not? Everything you do, you're eating, you're sleeping, you're speaking, every act, every time you move an arm, every time you move your mind, you are expressing Buddha nature. In your preferences, your choice of color, your choice of sound, all express your zen. Not my zen, your zen. You are always expressing the project, the state of the project. So this whole thing is not a matter of searching for tranquility and peace and calmness, and it is not the attaining of this ecstasy we hear about or becoming high. It is to learn to express your zen in your own way. That's what Zazen practice is all about. And it should certainly bring into the picture what I talked about at the beginning, service. Now, those of us who have visited a Japanese monastery or stayed a while at Shogenji or Takuzenji, they know what breakfast is like. It's worse than Bill's. Sorry about that. I'll erase that. Erase it. I have been told, breakfast there, is watery rice and some takwan, that is pickles. The rice is cooked without any salt, so they give you these salty pickles, and every temple monastery type of thing over there, they make their own takwan. And each one says they're most famous for their takwan. I've been told that it used to be mixed with barley, and then it was watered down so that it was known as sealing gruel. It reflected the ceiling. That's how thin it was. Now, at lunchtime, there is this gruel, and they also maybe have some bean paste soup, some miso, into which some of the vegetables that are grown in the nearby fields are cooked in. They're cooked in this soup, miso. And there was an episode that occurred long time ago about this food. It seems like in this particular monastery, every night, without anyone's knowing how it got there, vegetables for the next day's miso soup would appear, washed and nicely cut, and then all in this nicely arranged in this bamboo basket. And they found this every morning in the kitchen. Now, you know, it got to be such a regular thing that the Tenzo and the Roshi began to wonder who it could be. I mean, you know, nice thing to do, huh? And of course, they both came to the opinion, conclusion, that it was one of the monks in training. But which one? How to find him? So this Roshi dressed himself up like a monk, as if he were going to go out and practice night zazen in the grounds, you know, what the Shinzon called lonely sitting. And anyway, this Roshi discovered that there was a monk that was going down to the nearby river. This is what he did this evening anyway, this night. And he collected leaves from the local farmers that they had, the farmers had discarded these leaves in the process of washing their daikon, see. And this monk this night brought these secretly into the kitchen. I mean, it might, different days, different things. You know. So, thought this Roshi. This monk is one who could someday be my successor. And in later years, this proved to be true. So just to sit on a mat or on a chair with a blank mind and to be satisfied with peace is not enough. It must be accompanied by a development of character as well. And this development of character is translated as life of service. It is a secret goodness. Jesus speaks of it, you know, do what good, but don't talk about it. You do this, but don't say anything to anybody about it. You do this, but you never say anything to anybody about it. A secret service. To do acts of goodness of which others are not aware of who did it. To do good for the sake of goodness. Not for your ego, nor for the other, but just for the sake of goodness. To do good while forgetting goodness. Just to do. Just to act. Remember that the ones for whom you are doing and you are one. So forget about goodness. Yeah. This is the training. So changes come, and changes must come, or you will not emerge from this zazen as you should. You will just come out as you went in. So you practice knowing one finger Zen, your Zen, expressed your way. You've opened your heart to yourself, you've opened your mind to yourself. And you begin to understand Zen. Here we go, folks. He's one with the teeth. You need teeth in your sitting. Yeah, you do. As Henry used to say that, come to think about it. You need teeth in your sitting. And now. Isn't he darling? go abroad. You know what I mean by abroad? And do some hellfire and brimstone. And now, may the peace and the power that passeth all understanding hold us and keep us in the love of the Christed consciousness while we are seemingly separate one from another. And I do thank you very much. This rose has got such a beautiful aroma. That's what I can do for the rest of the day, huh? Anybody talks to me, I'll talk back.
If you find Lola's talks valuable, more will be posted in weeks to come.